When I was in seminary, I drove a friend's blue Honda Civic hatchback across country. It was a solo journey across the Pacific Northwest, across Montana and Wyoming, over the Great Lakes and down into Massachusetts. For days, I played the same two songs on repeat just because I could. I discovered a mountain range in Wyoming, Beartooth Pass, that unfolded in front of me to my surprise early one morning driving out of Yosemite. The open road was a revelation, and it was a joy. Fast forward 8 years or so, I'm married to Chris, and we have two kids, ages 14 months old and 3 years old, respectively. We've just moved to New Hampshire to start our ministry here at South Church. We need new cars, and I say to Chris, could you check to see if there are any Civic hatchbacks available? Soon, I'm the proud owner of a car exactly like the one I drove cross-country, and I am in love with it. It has manual transmission, manual door locks, manual window cranks, and no air conditioning. We made the move to New Hampshire in midsummer, and it's blazing hot. All four of us pile in the car in August, and I roll down the windows. The boys, who have never driven in a car without AC, bellow in surprise when the wind blasts back at them. They shake their heads like shaggy dogs after a bath, and Ben bellows, "Too much air! Too much air!" Eventually, they come to love the backseat wind tunnel, but it's a bit of a rough start. I tell you this story today because it's Easter, and because it's Passover, and because both these holidays are about freedom. The Buddha said, just as the great oceans have but one taste, the taste of salt, so too is there but one taste fundamental to all true teachings of the way, the taste of freedom. I love Passover for the same reason I love that car. I felt alive and free when I drove it. I felt close to the road. The Civic was small and bare bones. Mostly, I loved that it was a stick shift. I loved the little bumping under my fingers as I tipped it into third gear. I loved that if I wasn't paying attention and let out the clutch too quickly, the car bucked violently and stalled out. If I got overzealous and put it into fifth too soon, the engine raced and reminded me that I was getting a bit ahead of myself. It shimmied at 75 and responded to every pothole and bump in the road. Immediate feedback, instant mindfulness. The traditions of Passover hold a lot of the same appeal for me, especially the Passover Seder. In case you don't know, the Seder is a meal with a series of with a number of special foods and a series of rituals that are set out in a Haggadah, which is a kind of order of service for the evening. The elements of the Seder trace the Israelites' journey out of Egyptian bondage. And there are lots of versions of variations of Haggadot, but many traditions are always present, like the tasting of bitter herbs as a reminder of the bitterness of slavery, the eating of parsley dipped in salt water to symbolize the tears shed on the journey, and the drinking of sweet wine in an attitude of repose to celebrate the sweetness of freedom. The spiritual journey from bondage to freedom is marked viscerally. The signposts and landmarks are marked by taste and touch, question and answer, and they're colored by the particular experience of the participants. Every year I've attended a Seder, I have enacted the rituals in a slightly different group of people in a different moment of my life. Biting into the salted parsley, I can't help but recall the times I have tasted my own salty tears. Reclining to sip sweet wine, I am brought back to times of celebration and laughter with good friends. The ancient freedom story becomes interwoven with the particularity of my life, and I feel both more deeply. I've been a part of a lot of Seders over the years, and these rituals gain meaning over time. They become associated with our own freedom journeys and the bitterness and tears and sweetness that we have experienced directly. And they become associated with the freedom journeys that we witness others taking, the journeys of refugees to find safety, the path of recovery that addicts and alcoholics face, the challenges of young women and men launching their lives after leaving home. We taste freedom, we experience, we remember, and we discover a map for the journey of liberation. On Palm Sunday, Jesus entered Jerusalem. He arrived on the back of the donkey as the city was celebrating Passover. Passover was a tinderbox time in Jerusalem. The city was under the rule of the Roman Empire, and the people regularly got restless during the celebration of this holiday as they reflected on and re-experienced the aspiration to freedom. Jesus' ministry was dangerous. He said it. He described his own ministry in the words of the prophet Isaiah. He had come, he said, to bring good news to the poor, to proclaim release to the captives and recovery of sight to the blind, to let the oppressed go free. This was not a safe thing to be saying in that setting, in that moment, in that particular celebration. Jesus crafted a ministry of redemption and deliverance born out of love, and he lived it daily. We know how the story of Holy Week goes. Jesus participated in the Last Supper. He shared bread and wine. He was betrayed, captured, and killed. But on this day, Easter, the scriptures say a miracle occurred. Jesus had been buried in a tomb, but when the women go to that place in the morning, they discover that the stone has been rolled away and the cave is empty. Most Unitarian Universalists understand Jesus' rise after death as metaphor. Most of us believe in the possibility of resurrection as a spiritual transformation. But this way of thinking, in this way of thinking, resurrection remains a miracle. Jesus gave his life wholeheartedly to the cause of love and freedom, born out of his sense of connection with God. He died, but was not defeated. By his manner of living, he taught us the power of service to make men and women great, the power of love and integrity to transform lives and subvert oppressive systems. In biblical times, redemption meant reclamation. If a person owed money or labor to another and someone paid that price on his behalf, he had been redeemed. To be redeemed was to have one's debts forgiven, to be freed from an obligation. There's a poet by Sufi poet Hafiz that expresses this spirit. Someone put you on a slave block, and the unreal bought you. Now I keep coming to your owner saying, "This one is mine." You often overhear us talking, and this can make your heart leap with excitement. Don't worry, I will not let sadness possess you. I will gladly borrow all the gold I need to get you back. Jesus' redeeming power lay in his message and his ministry, in his willingness to turn over his life to the cause of love. Just as the great oceans have but one taste, the taste of salt, so too is there but one taste fundamental to all true teachings of the way, and this is the taste of freedom. We are here to become free in body and in spirit, and we are here to abet the freedom journeys of those around us. There will be tears along the way, and there will be bitterness, but there will be sweetness too, and repose. The stone rolls back, dawn breaks, and the miraculous scene is revealed. May you feel it this day, and may you serve it, today and always. Amen.